It's time for the ClimateCast. It's our weekly conversation about the science of climate change with NPR meteorologist Paul Huttner. But while I have him here, I have to talk to him a little bit about the weather. It is dark out there, Paul.
It was a dark and stormy morning, Carrie. Look, here's the deal. The core of the Twin Cities metro, that heavy rain has nudged off to the east, but still some heavier showers and thunderstorms. Parts of Dakota County, down around Lakeville, up into southern Washington County, and then over to Polk and St. Croix County, Carrie. The only warnings that remain in effect, that flash flood warning for the metro has expired, but southwestern Barron, southeastern Polk counties in northwestern Wisconsin, flash flood warning until 10:45. We've had some 2 to 4 inch rainfall totals in Wisconsin, about 2 to 3 in parts of St. Paul and the eastern and southeastern metro.
Yeah, you know that I live in the eastern metro over the border. Indeed. In Wisconsin. The intensity of the rain caught me by surprise. What happened?
Well, here's the thing. The dew point hit 70 degrees overnight. Well,
okay.
Why is that important? Well, because that's a huge amount of tropical moisture in the atmosphere. That's a July dew point in Minnesota on September 17th. So with all that moisture sitting there, we had a slow-moving line of storms that comes through. And when the storms aren't moving very quickly, they just continue to produce that torrential, copious downpours, those deluge-type rains. That's very typical for June, July, maybe part of August, mm-hmm. Not so much as we work into the second half of September.
Okay, so as the rain moves through, and you said the system is basically moving east, does it end up feeling more like fall tomorrow?
It will, yes. Okay. You'll notice a difference. We'll be back into the 60s. Dew points will drop into the 40s and 50s, but we've got one more shot of thunderstorms perhaps this afternoon before the system finally pulls out of here. Slight risk for severe weather. We'll keep an eye on it from the Weather Lab later today.
Good to have you here. Let's talk about the climate cast.
Absolutely.
And let's bring our guest in. Kate Weinberger is a graduate of Columbia University's PhD program on climate and health, and she's currently a research associate at the Institute for Environment and Society at Brown University, and she's with us from Providence. Kate, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Your research focus is about health, global health, and climate change. And I have to say, when I think about where they connect, I think about changing conditions and the rise of diseases like malaria and dengue fever. I mean, is that the first thing we should be thinking about where these two ideas, facts, come together?
Yeah, so vector-borne diseases like malaria and dengue fever are certainly a part of it. So climate factors like rainfall and temperature are among the factors that influence both the geographical and the seasonal range of diseases like malaria. So it's definitely possible that we'll see shifts in the regions and times of year at which we see these kinds of disease in the future.
Okay, wait, let me just stop you there. When you say shifts in the regions, does that mean disease-carrying mosquitoes may turn up in places where we haven't seen them, thus giving rise to more cases of malaria or dengue in places we haven't seen them?
What we expect is that areas that currently have these diseases are certainly going to have more cases, and there also may be some shifts in the boundaries as well. That said, for example, here in North America, we don't think it's likely that we're going to see a reemergence of malaria.
Okay. One last thing just to follow up here, because I was reading a news story about this from the New York Times about southern Taiwan. It said, in recent decades, the disease, which is caused by a virus carried by Aedes mosquitoes, has risen sharply around the world because of urbanization, population growth, climate change, increasing international trade, and an explosion in trash that mosquitoes can use as breeding sites. This is according to the World Health Organization. I have to say, I don't think of southern Taiwan as a place where this kind of malaria or dengue would spread.
Right. So it's important to keep in mind that there are factors other than climate change, like urbanization, that could change the spread of disease factors. But all of that said, I think it's really important to keep in mind that shifts in vector-borne diseases are only one of many impacts that climate change could have on our health. So actually, when I think of climate change, the first thing that comes to mind for me is the direct impact of rising temperatures on our health. So, mm-hmm. For example, as temperatures warm, we're going to see heat waves become both more intense and more frequent. And heat waves can lead to death and disease, not only from heat stroke itself, but also from other causes like cardiovascular and respiratory diseases. And the magnitudes of these kinds of events can be really striking. So to give you an extreme example, the 2003 heat wave in Europe which was a really big one, was estimated to have caused over 70,000 deaths.
Wow. Wow. I didn't from a variety of reasons.
Yes.
Okay. Paul?
Kate, Paul Huttner here. Good to talk with you this morning. We get the incidence increased of heat waves. We've seen some vector-borne diseases here in Minnesota. West Nile virus, something that's emerged here in the last several years. Lyme disease from ticks as they proliferate in milder winters in the upper Midwest. Talk about the United States and some of the changes that we are seeing as our winter extreme temperatures are not as cold as they used to be, and we're seeing longer mosquito, longer frost-free seasons. Our growing season has increased 9 days to 2 weeks across the upper Midwest, and of course, frost is a good thing if you're an allergy sufferer, isn't it?
It is, yes. So there are going to be a number of impacts in the United States. So aside from heat waves, another thing that we're going to see, because climate change isn't just about temperature, are increases in heavy rainfall events, which in turn can lead to severe flooding, especially in coastal areas of the United States. And some of the health risks of floods and storms include injuries, drowning, electrocution. And then there are also risks after the storm has passed as well, like waterborne disease outbreaks, water in building leading to mold problems, leading to asthma and other respiratory conditions. And disasters like storms and floods also have adverse effects on mental health as well. But you're right, there's a lot of other more indirect health effects that we may see here in the United States. One that we may see in the western United States is wildfires. So climate change is expected to increase the frequency of wildfires through a combination of high temperatures and low rainfall. And the smoke from wildfire causes increases in respiratory and cardiovascular diseases. Also, you can get burns and injuries directly from the fire.
Let's talk about the respiratory aspect for a minute, because I know that you're an expert in asthma in those areas. With the longer growing seasons we're seeing in much of the United States, how about asthma and allergic reactions in people? Is that increasing, and is there any metric to say that that's increasing the incidence of, say, hospital visits or the medicines that we use for that?
Sure. So you've happened upon my favorite topic. So my area
was not an accident.
Actually in climate and pollen and allergic diseases. So allergic diseases like asthma have increased globally. We're not certain that this increase is actually due to climate change yet, but we do expect that we could see rises in the future. And the reason this is that pollen production is linked both to temperature and to rainfall. So for example, when winter temperatures are relatively high, we tend to see both a longer pollen season and higher pollen concentrations in the year that follows. And of course, we also know that exposure to some kinds of pollen causes symptoms among people who have allergies and asthma. So for example, I was part of a study during my doctoral work in New York City where we showed that high concentrations of certain kinds of tree pollen, like birch and oak, increase emergency room visits for asthma, especially among children. And we also found that there was an increase in drugstore sales of over-the-counter allergy medications that you're probably familiar with, like Benadryl and Claritin. And so as temperatures keep warming up, we expect longer and more severe pollen seasons. And unfortunately, what this means is that people who suffer from allergies and asthma are going to be more highly exposed to pollen, and they're going to be exposed for a longer period of time each year.
Boy, makes me happy to be among the few, I guess, it doesn't have allergies. Wow.
You're lucky.
Kate, thank you very much. Really good to have the benefit of your research. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kate Weinberger is a research associate at the Institute for Environment and Society at Brown University. The one thing that occurred to me, Paul, is that I wonder if cities and states are going to be called upon to employ people with Kate's specialties as more and more of our healthcare system is affected by this.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Minnesota Department of Health has issued pretty comprehensive reports on the effects of climate change in Minnesota. There's some really good stuff online if you want to go to the Minnesota Department of Health. I know that's already happening here. I think that's going to grow in other states.
This kind of fits with something that you've been reading up on, which was a New York Times piece about the best places to live as the world warms, Alaska.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are we all moving to Alaska?
The new Florida, Carrie. That's what they're saying, or at least what Matthew Kahn, who wrote Climatopolis, is saying, a 2010 book. Look, here's the thing. As climates shift, he predicts millions of people are going to be moving to more climate-safe areas. Where? Well, out-migrations from places like California, the desert Southwest, Phoenix, L.A., San Diego. East Coast and Gulf cities as sea levels rise. In migrations, Alaska, the new Florida. How about the upper Midwest?
How about Minnesota?
We're listed as one of the places that could be desirable by 2100. Milwaukee, Detroit, Minneapolis, higher elevation, more stable and cooler climates in the northern states. Why? Well, the drivers are not just temperatures, but water supplies, wildfires. We've seen the catastrophes in California, and the cost of insurance, huge, because it's going to become more cost prohibitive to live in those areas that are more unsafe as climates shift.
Quality of life and cost of living will end up being a big deal. We don't always think about how climate change applies to that.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks,
Carrie. The Climate Cast for the week.